Time for talking is over, Bodine. Make your play.
It's up to you, Smith. I really wish you wouldn't force this. I just don't see the point.
The point is this.
Bodine's slug took Smith in the gut, knocking him back, but not putting him down.
Bastard!
He pulled iron. Smith cocked his Remington 44, and the muzzle rose slowly. Bodine shot him twice in the chest. Bodine reloaded as he walked over to the dying man and looked down at him.
Fast. Always know that. See the varmint. Never thought it'd be this soon.
You got kin, Smith?
No one who'd give a damn. Wrap me up good, Bodine. I never did like the cold.
All right, Smith.
The gunfighter slipped into that long sleep with his eyes open. Bodine dropped his Colt back into leather and hooked the hammer thong. He knelt down and took the blanket that was handed him by a trooper, spreading it over Smith. Two wolves glanced at Simon Bull, still sitting on the fence.
Still want to try him, Bull?
I'm a lot bigger than stuttering. I can soak up more lead. I believe I can stay in my boots long enough to kill him.
But you would both be dead.
Can you think of a better epitaph than the man who killed Matt Bodine?
Yes, I can. How about, he lived a long and noble life.
You good with a gun, Breed. But you ain't no gunfighter. You don't understand us no more than I understand Injuns.
Perhaps not.
Two wolves walked over to his brother and helped him pick up Smith and carry him over to the shallow mass grave hole that the burial detail had chopped out of the cold earth.
Just senseless, brother. Just senseless.
Travers' platoon escorted the survivors back to civilization, including the prisoners Tom Thomas and Miss Terry Kelly. She rode in an open wagon as Sam Two Wolves marched apace on his horse.
Sam.
I have nothing at all to say to you, Miss Kelly. Civilization would have been better served had you died back in Cutter.
You don't mean that, Sam. I've made mistakes, Sam, but don't we all? I deserve another chance.
I know all about your past, Terry. I know you've been a criminal all your life. You've been run out of every town you've ever tried to settle in. You and Thomas deserve each other.
Sam! What a horrible thing to say. Not gentlemanly at all. Certainly not a bit like you.
Terry?
Yes, my darling Samuel.
You can go straight to hell.
Yeah!
You goddamn stuck-up half-breed son of a bitch! I hate your rotten red guts!
Was that you responsible for that caterwauling back yonder?
I certainly was.
She tried to butter you up?
For a very short time. I told her to go to hell.
At the head of the column, Colonel Travers rode with Sergeant McGuire.
Mac, what in the devil is so funny back there with those two?
Oh, they're just young, sir, and full of it.
I might as well tell you now, Mac. Your request for transfer to the 7th Cavalry was turned down. I tried, Mac.
I know you did, sir. Just as well, I reckon. I was trying to get with Major Reno. I know him well. But they'd have most likely put me with Custer, and he takes too many chances to suit me.
You're probably better off right here with me, Mac.
After a time, Bodine and Two Wolves broke off from the column and headed south toward their ranches.
We'd best stop at Dad's and pick up some supplies. Why don't you come on down and spend some time with me? I haven't beaten you at checkers since the last time we played.
You haven't beaten me in checkers in years, brother. But I shall pay you a visit for a time. I want to look over the miserable hovel you call a home.
Hovel? Just for that, you can do the cooking.
Thank you. At least I know now that neither of us will starve, since you seem to have difficulty even in getting water to boil.
Now that's an exaggeration, and you know it.
The hard Wyoming winter hit them again before spring managed to shove winter aside. But the two blood-bonded brothers stayed warm in Bodine's house near the powder, venturing out only to hunt, chop wood, and to break ice for the cattle and horses to drink. As the days began to warm, Slim Man, a breed like two wolves, rode up to the cabin. He was welcomed in for food and coffee and for any news he might have. And he had plenty. After eating his fill and over a second cup of coffee, Slim Man pushed back his chair and rubbed his belly.
Good grub. You didn't cook it, did you, Bodine?
I ought to make you wash the dishes for that remark. You got any news worth telling?
Yes, none of it good. Crow King, Sitting Bull, and Gaul have been on their hunting grounds. The army ordered them back to the reservation 2.5 months ago, and they refused. The Cheyenne have agreed to join the Brule, Oglala, Sanzark, Blackfeet, Minikanju, and Hunk Papa in their fight against the army.
Where are they now, Slim Man?
Heading for the Rosebuds. They plan to make their camp close to Little Bighorn.
What's the matter?
I was talking to some crows 2-3 days ago. They've been told to make ready for an expedition around the middle of May. It has to be against the Sioux and the Cheyenne.
Who will be leading it?
Custer.
Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer, known also as Yellow Hair, Long Hair, and Ringlets. Custer was known as a ruthless, if a brash and sometimes reckless, Indian fighter.
What other wonderful news do you have for us?
Tom Thomas and Terry Kelly have escaped from confinement and linked up with the Texas gunfighter, Walker.
I thought Walker was dead.
So did everyone else. Not so. Most of his army was slaughtered, but he escaped, along with maybe a dozen men. Thomas and Terry have formed their own little outlaw army, with Simon Bull, Pete Terrence, Jim Wilson, to name a few.
Where are they?
No one seems to know. But this much is certain, Bodine. Thomas has sworn to kill you. I think Thomas has taken over that little settlement on the Yellowstone, right where the Bighorn starts. He's got 15 or 20 hard cases working for him.
Any news about Corrigan?
Yeah. He filed on land just south of your spread, Bodine. Just had equipment shipped in, and he's going to farm and live in peace. I believe he's sincere.
Bodine nodded his head, but his thoughts were not on farming. He was remembering his dreams about the great battle near the Little Bighorn.
Thanks for the meal, but I should be getting a move on. Spring will be here soon. I have a job up north waiting for me.
Be safe, Slim Man.
I will.
Slim Man took his leave. The two blood brothers stepped outside the cabin to stand in the surprisingly warm morning air.
What are your thoughts, Bodine?
Breaking my word to our father?
I don't think he would be disappointed if you did. I think he felt you would mull over his words and then choose the white man's ways, as he pushed me to do. But do you think you will be believed?
Probably not, brother. But I have to try.
I'll saddle up. Are we going to see Travers?
Yes. We'll stop by Dad's and see if he's heard anything.
They pulled out within the hour, making sure they carried plenty of ammunition. Bodine did not take Thomas's threat lightly. The man was about half crazy, and Bodine knew Thomas blamed him for his downfall. They rode toward the crazy woman, spending the night at Bodine's parents' house. At the elder Bodine's ranch, they traded information with their father.
It's been quiet around here, son. Although others have reported seeing bands of Indians now and then.
They're on their traditional hunting grounds.
Making ready for war. I wonder if Lone Dog is in the Rosebuds.
Not from what I've heard. He and his band have been working much farther north, up north of the Mussel Shale. And they've been causing a lot of grief up there.
He always was loco.
And always hated you. Envious. I never understood that.
Bodine had not told his father why he was going to the fort, and the elder Bodine did not push it.
Stay out of the Rosebuds, Dad. You've got some holdings up close to the border, I know. It would be best if you sent some hands up there to push the cattle south.
Any particular reason, boy?
Maybe the cows would like a change of scenery.
By dawn, they had crossed the crazy woman and were heading for the clear. From the clear, the garrison was a good 3 days' ride away. When they had crossed over into Montana territory, they began seeing small bands of Indians. They were challenged several times, but once the Indians recognized them, they veered off, and Bodine and Two Wolves were left alone.
Odd. They won't even ride close enough to talk.
They don't want us to spoil their medicine. They are preparing for war.
They're also telling us that we are not welcome at the main camp.
Yes. It is very distressing to me, brother. I want to go to the Rosebuds to see if my father is there. But I have been forbidden from it. I feel like a traitor going to see the army. But Medicine Horse ordered me. So if I do that, I must think and act like a white man. It is very confusing.
They rode in silence for a time. After a while, they came close to a band of Cheyenne, led by a sub-chief named Strong Bull. The Cheyenne braves lifted their hands, shielding their eyes from Bodine and Two Wolves. As they drew nearer, the Cheyenne turned their ponies, refusing to look at the Blood Brothers. Angry, Two Wolves reined up.
Why do you treat me this way, Strong Bull? Have I not always been your friend? Have I not shared your food as you have shared mine? Am I not still the same person that I have always been?
Strong Bull waved his band forward and rode away without saying a word.
Damn it. They've left the reservation to join the Sioux.
That means my father has joined Gaul and the others in the Rosebuds. He is going to fight.
I don't believe that.
You're forgetting that Medicine Horse is still a great warrior of the Cheyenne. I knew it would come to this. My father was shamed. For years he lived in peace with the whites, on land given us by the government. He has left the bulk of our people on the new land, and brought only the old warriors like Strong Bull with him to the Rosebuds. Chiefs, sub-chiefs, shamans, and war chiefs. They are going to die, Bodine. This is the only way they can save face.
Then, there is nothing we can do.
Nothing.
What are you thinking, brother?
Things that are of interest to me alone.
Two Wolves rode past Bodine to take the lead. But Bodine was not to be put off that easily. He cantered to Two Wolves' side.
You know that the Indians cannot win. Your father did the right thing by ordering you to adopt the white man's ways.
I know only that at this moment I am confused. And your talking is an irritant I can do without.
Do you want to go to the mountain, brother?
Yes.
Then go. I'll be back in 3 or 4 days. Meet me at the creek where we saw Strong Bull.
Two Wolves stared at Bodine.
And if I don't?
What are you trying to get me to say, brother? I meant only that I would meet you at the crossing, nothing more.
You might never see me again, Bodine, except on the field of battle.
Don't be a damn fool. You couldn't kill a soldier any more than I could, so stop being so goddamn noble.
Are you saying that I am doing this to be a martyr?
Of course. Damn it, brother, the ways of the wild are going and soon they'll be gone. When are you going to realize that?
These words from the mouth of a gunfighter.
Sam, you can go straight to hell.
Bodine did not expect Two Wolves to follow him, and Two Wolves didn't. Bodine camped alone that night just south of Pyramid Butte. His sleep was restless, his dreams troublesome. First light found him on the silent trail, working his way north, and at noon, he rode into the garrison. Lieutenant Gary walked toward him as he was stabling Rowdy.
Lieutenant, how's the arm?
Oh, I'm fit as a fiddle. Good to see you. What brings you this far into hostile country?
I've got to see Colonel Travers.
I'm sure he'll see you immediately. I'll walk you to him. You heard about Tom Thomas and Terry?
Yes, and about what they're doing along the Yellowstone.
They didn't escape from our custody, thank God. U.S. Marshals had picked them up and were transporting them to Nebraska to stand trial when Walker and some other men hit the wagon.
They're definitely at the settlement on the Yellowstone?
Yes, but it's a civilian matter, Bodine. We can become involved only if the territorial governor requests our assistance.
I'm not faulting, Gary. You don't have the men to go looking for outlaws.
I'm glad you feel that way. There are many who don't. Here we are. Let's see if the colonel is busy.
Travers waved Bodine in and to a chair. He sat down behind his desk.
Come on in, Bodine. You stay, Lieutenant. What's on your mind, Bodine?
Bodine could detect something in the colonel's eyes and tone of voice that gave him a precognition about the outcome of this meeting. The colonel probably knew that a major push was being planned over at Fort Abe Lincoln, Dakota Territory, and he wasn't going to be very receptive to anything Bodine said about the Indians.
Not going to be a friendly meeting, huh, Colonel?
We'll talk about the pleasant weather, Bodine. I'll ask how your herds look and the health of your family and so on and so forth. Keep it light.
I didn't ride 3 days for a chit-chat.
Travers leaned back in his chair. He lit a cigar and smoked it for a moment, keeping his eyes on Bodine.
All right, Bodine. But I cannot discuss military matters with you.
Why not? The Indians already know that Custer and the 7th Cavalry are leaving Fort Abraham Lincoln in mid-May to lead an assault against them on their hunting grounds in the Rosebuds.
God damn it! That was one of the best-kept secrets of this entire campaign!
Lieutenant Gary looked awfully uncomfortable under the colonel's outburst. Bodine simply shrugged his shoulders.
I demand to know where you got that information.
I got it from an Indian who goes by the name of Mokstawalmst.
How do you spell that?
How the hell do I know?
All right, Bodine, but you better keep your mouth shut about this upcoming campaign. That isn't a threat from me, by the way. It's just a friendly piece of advice.
I'll take it as such. Stay out of the Rosebuds, Colonel. That is not a threat from me. Just a friendly piece of advice that might save your life.
What do you know that I need to know, Bodine?
The army is going to lose.
Thanks, Bodine. I needed a good laugh. Now you listen to me, young man. The army will not fail. Custer is probably the best Indian fighter on the frontier. Now tell me, why do you think we're going to lose?
Visions, Colonel. Visions in the minds of many people. All of them the same, including a vision of mine.
Indian hoodoo, Bodine. Do you actually expect me to act on your dreams?
No, but I had to tell you. My conscience is clear. I tried.
Travers waved that away, signaling the topic was concluded.
Now, where is Two Wolves?
I don't know.
Have you said everything you came here to say, Bodine?
I suppose I have. Yes.
Travers stood up. The meeting was over. Two Wolves was not at the crossing when Bodine arrived at the creek, nor was there any sign he had been there. Bodine rested for a time at the creek, allowing Rowdy to drink and graze. He stood for a time, looking toward the west. The Rosebuds were a half a day's ride away, but Bodine knew better than to ride there. He had been fairly warned to stay out. He built a small fire and made coffee, then rolled a cigarette and thought about his options. He had done his duty as an American citizen by trying to warn Colonel Travers at the fort. He could do no more than that. What he should do was go on back to his spread and forget about it. But he didn't want to return home. He was too restless for that. Bodine had 4 very capable men working for him, so the ranch was in good shape. However, he knew very well that he was behaving foolishly by staying out here by himself. If the ghost dancing had begun, the blood might become so hot among the braves that they could easily kill him before they knew who he was. If who he was still made a difference. His thoughts turned to Two Wolves. Just how far did his responsibility toward his brother go? Two Wolves was a grown man. If he had made up his mind to disobey his father and return to the Indian way, so be it. Bodine had no right to interfere. Bodine carefully put out his small fire and saddled up. He would go home. He had done all that he could do. March drifted into April, and April moved with warm days and cool to sometimes downright cold nights into early May. Bodine had neither seen nor heard from Two Wolves. He had stayed close to his ranch, making sure all the work was caught up. Bodine was getting very restless toward the middle of the month. Rowdy was about to tear down the barn with his antics, telling Bodine he was tired of lollygagging about. On May 16th, 1876, Bodine saddled Rowdy, stopped by to tell his parents he'd see them when he got back, and headed for the Spirit Mountain. On May 17th, 1876, On a foggy dawn, some 425 miles east of the Rosebuds, Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer took his position at the head of the column. As they pulled out, the wives and girlfriends stood in doorways and waved goodbye to the men. Some 26 of the women were seeing their husbands for the last time. Elizabeth Custer, who would accompany her husband in the two-mile-long column during the first day of the march, was uneasy. Somehow, she knew she was seeing her husband for the last time. As the sun's new dawning played over the long column, she felt she was witnessing a mirage of specter-like mounted horsemen, ghost riders moving upward into the sky. At that same moment, far to the west, Sitting Bull, leader and medicine man of seven bands of Lakota Sioux, was experiencing the same vision he had seen months before, that of many soldiers falling upside down into an Indian camp.
Yellow hair comes.
Bodine sat up in his blankets, shaking and drenched with sweat from his terrible dreams. He had witnessed a bloody, terrible massacre, a slaughter of army troops. Bodine stripped and jumped naked into a creek. The shockingly cold water cleansed his body and calmed his mind. He dressed and made coffee, then cooked breakfast. But his mind would not erase the horrible dreams he had experienced. Something monumental was taking place. But what? Then it came to him. Custer had left Fort Lincoln over in the Dakotas with his troops. Bodine relaxed a bit as he ate his breakfast. It would take Custer a good 30 to 40 hard days to complete the march to the Rosebuds. He had plenty of time to find Two Wolves and talk some sense into him. Or knock some sense into him, whichever was necessary. He saddled up and continued his searching for his blood brother. He would go first to the Spirit Mountain. But he had a hunch his brother had left the mountain. But he would find him. He had time. That's what he kept telling himself. He searched the mountain, finding signs of where his brother had camped. Two Wolves had shifted locations many times over the months, always staying on the mountain. But Bodine could find no recent sign of him. Bodine stayed on the mountain for 5 days, until he was convinced Two Wolves was gone. Bodine left the mountain and headed north, working his way toward the Yellowstone. A week later, Bodine still had not been able to pick up Two Wolves' trail. It seemed as though his brother had dropped off the face of the earth. Bodine had turned east, searching from the Rosebud to the Tongue, and then traveling the vast and lonely emptiness between the Tongue River and Mitzpah Creek. He made camp by an embankment and built a fire. He just didn't see the point of going on. There was no doubt that Two Wolves knew he was looking for him. Bodine had seen 100 or so Indians during the past week, talking with some of them. But whenever he mentioned his brother's name, they would change the subject or clam up entirely.
All right. If that's the way it is to be, brother, so be it.
Looking for me?
Why should I look for a person who has no more sense than a goat?
If you're not looking for me, why are you so far from home?
Two Wolves walked down the embankment, leading his horse.
I grew restless with all the inactivity.
He looked at Two Wolves. He was wearing boots and jeans and a beaded buckskin shirt. His hair was cut short, but he wore a headband. Two Wolves caught the direction of his eyes.
I don't know who I am, so I will dress as what I am, a half-breed.
That's all right with me. As long as you behave like the intelligent person I know you are. I thought I'd follow the creek down a ways and then cut east over to the Powder and take that on down to home range.
I might decide to ride with you. I might not.
Bodine let the subject drop with that remark from Two Wolves. He wasn't going to push him.
Have you been to the Rosebuds?
No. You?
No. I wanted to go. I wanted to see my father one more time. But I was afraid he would turn his back on me. I would not want that as my last memory of him. I have dreamed.
My dreams have been unpleasant, too.
I prayed and fasted on the mountain, seeking guidance, but nothing came to me. I believe I am a non-person. I am no longer a human being.
If you are not, then I am not.
That may also be truth.
Bodine looked up at the sun.
There's 6, maybe 7 hours of daylight left. We could cover a lot of ground in that time.
That is definitely the truth.
Both young men stood up.
There is something you should know, brother. General Crook has left Fort Fetterman with a large force. There have already been small battles between Crook and the Cheyenne and Sioux. Crook and Custer believe they can trap my... the Indians. With Crook coming from the south and Yellowhair from the east, they will not trap the Indians. They will die.
I tried to convince Colonel Travers of this. He would not listen.
Then you have done all that you can do.
How many Indians are camped along the river in the Rosebuds?
Crow King says they are as plenty as the leaves on the trees. I've spoken to a few warriors from the Hunkpapa. 7,000 in the Rosebuds, Bodine.
7,000?
Yes. That would mean more than 3,000 warriors at least.
And you think we should do what with this information?
I do not plan to do anything with it. What you do with it is your concern.
We could ride to the fort, tell Colonel Travers. Of course he wouldn't believe me.
Probably not. What is the date, brother?
I don't have any idea. May something or the other. I've lost track of time. We could ride north and try to intercept Custer's columns.
This is also true.
Going north would be closer than trying to ride for the fort.
It would certainly be the humane thing to do to try to reach Custer. A man should know he is going to die.
Of course, he won't believe us either.
Probably not.
They both return to the creek and fill their canteens. Then they walked toward their horses and saddled up.
This could be a dangerous ride for you, brother.
I would not feel right if I let you go riding off alone, Bodine. You might get lost.
I remember when you got lost when you were about 14.
Me? Lost? I've never been lost.
The two young men angled toward the northwest, following trails and paths that only the Indians and a few mountain men knew of. This was raw, rugged, beautiful, and untamed country. The men lost track of the days as one blended into another, and they began riding more west than north.
We may have missed him.
According to the braves I talked with, the column was several miles long and with infantry, moving no more than 10 miles a day. I think we've come too far west.
He twisted in the saddle and pointed to a butte in the distance.
Let's make camp up there and sit it out for a couple of days. The horses can use the rest.
On the flat, they found an overhang that was blackened from the countless fires of those the Indians call the people who came before. Past the overhang, in a cave, they found a small stream that bubbled out of the rocks, a stream with cold, clear water. Two wolves killed two rabbits for supper while Bodine built a fire and heated water for coffee. They slept soundly that night, knowing their horses would alert them if danger was near. They could only stay for 2 days, for their supplies were dangerously low, and they would have to ride for a settlement on the Yellowstone very soon. On the afternoon of the second day, two wolves spotted the dust. Bodine and two wolves hurriedly broke camp and saddled up, riding in an easy lope toward the long column. As soon as they were spotted, several of the 40 Indian scouts, mostly Crow and Ree, broke from the column and raced toward them. Bodine and two wolves did not stop, but instead rode right through and headed for the front of the column. Major Marcus A. Reno broke from the column and loped over to Bodine and two wolves.
Just hold up right there, gentlemen. What's the big hurry?
I'm Matt Bodine, Major. This is Sam Two Wolves, son of Medicine Horse.
I've heard of you both. Now what do you want?
To see Custer. To try to save his life. And yours as well.
You have news of the hostiles? Perhaps you would like to share the humor with me, Sam?
Some other time, Major. Providing you have that much time left to you.
Custer had ordered the column to arrest. He loped over to join Reno. Reno backed up his mount and spoke quietly with Custer for a moment. Custer moved forward to look at Bodine and two wolves. The colonel's long, flowing hair had been cut short even for that time. His mustache was thick and bushy, hanging well over his mouth. He wore a red tie, fringed buckskins, and a wide-brimmed campaign hat. He was 36 years old. Custer waved Reno back to the column and faced the two men alone.
State your business, Bodine.
You're riding into a death trap, Colonel. You have vastly underestimated the strength of the Sioux and the Cheyenne and the Rosebuds.
You saw the encampment?
My news comes from Crow King.
Then I must place no credence in your warning, sir. But I do thank you for your concern. Is there anything else?
We've had a hard ride to warn you, sir. We could do with some supplies.
How many days?
3 should do it.
See the quartermaster. Good day, gentlemen.
Custer wheeled his mount and rode back to the column. Bodine stared at Custer's back, a disgusted expression on his face.
On second thought, I think we can do without his supplies. We'll hunt what we need. That sound all right with you? Brother?
Bodine glanced at him. His brother was staring at the long column intently, an odd expression on his face.
What do you see?
I do not want their supplies either, Bodine. Let's ride.
They rode on to a settlement on the Yellowstone, on the way living on rabbits and berries and fish. At the settlement, which some were already calling Rosebud because of its location at the mouth of the river, they bathed and had a shave and a haircut and enjoyed food they did not have to cook themselves. They soon found that the people in the village were very excited that Custer was coming to deal with the hostiles once and for all. It was here, at the mouth of the Rosebud, that General Alfred H. Terry, the commander of the Department of Dakota, had ordered Custer to turn south to find the hostiles, believed camped in the Rosebud Mountains, probably along the Little Bighorn. Bodine and Two Wolves spent one night camped just outside the tiny settlement and pulled out before dawn the next morning, following the Rosebud down to its gentle curving toward the southwest. There, they angled off on a trail that would take them to the Tongue. Both had decided they would camp for a time along the Tongue and do some hunting. Both knew that was not the real reason for their staying close to the Rosebuds, but neither one spoke that reason aloud. They loafed for several days, fishing, hunting, sleeping, and acting like a couple of kids, swimming in a deep, cold pool of the Tongue. They were fixing their supper under a late afternoon's dying sun when a call came from the gathering shadows.
Hello, the fire! We're friendly, but slap out of grub.
Come on in.
Bodine drew his colt and reared the hammer back, knowing the sound would reach the distance. He wasn't being unfriendly, just cautious.
We'll be right back. Gotta go back and get our horses. We didn't know who the fire belonged to.
A pair of young men approached the fire, leading their horses.
Well, thanks muchly. We've been drifting after having spent the winter in a line shack just south of the Missouri.
Made the mistake of wandering into the Rosebuds. Man, I never seen so damn many Injuns in all my life.
It's a good thing they didn't see you.
You sure got that right. When we seed what we was getting into, we got out of it in a hurry.
Bodine poured them coffee and began dishing up the food. It was venison fried in wild onions with beans. But to the hungry young cowboys, it was a feast. Two Wolves eyeballed how fast the plates were emptying, smiled, and began slicing more meat to fry.
I better tell y'all, they some bad old boys about a day behind us, headed by a gent named Bull, Simon Bull.
We've heard of him.
They're looking for the gunfighter Bodine. I hear he's a bad one, too.
Yeah, he's got quite a name for himself. Simon Bull's a riding to kill him, that's what we heard.
He won't do it.
How come you say that?
I'm Bodine.
Both young men stopped eating and stared. Bodine jerked a thumb toward his brother.
That's the son of the Cheyenne War Chief Medicine Horse, Sam Two Wolves. We're brothers in blood.
Pleasure to meet you, gentlemen. Eat, eat, please. No one has ever turned away from food at a Cheyenne fire.
Cheyenne?
Of course. The trick is to get away after you've eaten and rested.
And always eat everything an Indian gives you. It's very bad manners to leave food uneaten. Not to mention being a great insult.
The boys went to gobbling.
Boys, you don't actually have to lick the plates clean. We were joking.
Really?
No, no, that's all right. That sure was a good meal, wasn't it?
Yes, sir, best meal I've had in, well, probably forever. That sure was a fine, fine meal.
It's just too bad that we have to get going now.
Right, now. Thanks again, gents. Bye.
They mounted up and rode out quickly.
Shame on you, you wild Indian.
Shame on me? I'm not the one with the reputation. You're the big bad gunfighter who frightens young cowboys. What about Simon Bull?
What about him? I don't have any quarrel with Simon.
He's riding to kill you.
Yeah? If he's got it to do, he's got it to do.
They broke camp at dawn and moved south, staying on the west side of the Tongue. They took their time as they headed for a trading post on the river.
It's the only trading post for 75 miles, brother. Bull will probably be there.
I know. But we need supplies, and I need to find out what the date is.
What would you do, Bodine, if I decided to ride to the Rosebuds?
I'd stop you.
You would try.
I'd stop you.
Very well, but why?
Because you don't belong there. You don't hate the white man, Sam. Neither does Medicine Horse. You don't hate the army. They're just men following orders. And a lot of them don't like it either.
But my father is by the river, waiting to die with his people.
With some of his people, brother. You admitted that yourself.
Pointless argument. Each of us will do what we think is best.
This is truth. Trading post is just up ahead.
And Simon Bull is probably waiting for us.
Waiting for me, brother.
Us, you jackass.
Always meddling.
I promised your parents I would look after you.
When did you see them?
While you were camped on the mountain looking for me. I was enjoying the hospitality of your mother's cooking and your father's conversation.
Unbelievable.
The trading post was a big, low, and long building, securely built and fortified against Indian attack. The stables and corral were in the back.
That's Simon Bull's horse. I recognize it from the fight at Cutter.
This should be interesting. Two men with him, at least, if all those horses are together.
The way your luck runs, they probably are.
Bodine and Two Wolves stabled their horses. They took their rifles from the saddle boots, levered rounds into the chambers, and eased the hammers down. Bodine tossed the stable boy a dime to keep an eye on their horses.
You know the date, boy?
June the 18th.
Bodine nodded and walked out of the stable, Two Wolves by his side. Custer and his men were headed south toward the Rosebud Mountains. The Cheyenne camped along the Little Bighorn were in the midst of their ghost dance. Bodine pushed open the door of the trading post and stepped in, Two Wolves right behind him. Simon Bull and his men were at a table, playing poker with a greasy deck of cards. Bull looked up, an irritated expression on his face. He hadn't heard Bodine and Two Wolves ride in. Bodine and Two Wolves walked to a table, sat down.
Barkeep, what do you have to eat around here?
A venison stew and fresh baked bread is what we got.
That'll be fine.
You boys eat hearty now. A man shouldn't go to meet his maker on an empty stomach.
Then you better eat up, Bull, and tell your rabid skunks to do the same.
Jim Wilson and Pete Terrence, the two men at the bar, stirred at this, but carefully kept their hands away from their guns. Bodine's Winchester was lying on the table, the muzzle pointed at them. Two Wolves' Winchester was also on the table, the muzzle pointing in the direction of Simon Bull.
I thought you boys were all tied up with Thomas and Walker.
Someone come along and wiped out about half of Thomas's bunch. Little two-bit town up in Montana. Took the heart right out of the rest of the boys. We decided to drift.
Why don't you keep drifting?
Oh, I probably will, Bodine. After you and me settle up our differences.
I have no quarrel with you, Bull. Never have.
It's just something that has to be, Bodine. Too damn many people saying you're the best there is. I can't have that. Well, you're good, all right. But not as good as me.
Seems like I heard the same thing from Stutter and Smith.
It do, don't it?
Bodine and Two Wolves ate the stew, and it was good. When their plates were empty, Bodine and Two Wolves stood up, rifles in hand, their thumbs on the hammers.
Where you boys think you're going?
Back on the trail, Bull. I told you. I don't have any quarrel with you.
Damn you, Bodine! What's it take to make you stand and fight?
Admittedly, not much, Bull. So I guess I'll just have to even out the odds some. Ah!
He shot Bull in the center of the chest, the slug slamming the big man out of the rickety old chair and dropping him to the floor. Ah! Two Wolves put a slug into the belly of Pete Terrence and shifted the muzzle, shooting Jim Wilson in the chest.
Holy Christ!
That was good stew. How much do we owe you?
50 cents.
Take it out of Simon Bull's pockets.
Ooh, yes, sir.
Bodine and Two Wolves ignored the sprawling bodies and walked around the trading post, picking up supplies. The post owner busied himself going through the pockets of the dead men. Bodine tossed some money on the plank bar.
Here's money for the supplies.
Bodine and Two Wolves walked out of the death-stinking trading post. Dawn found them camped on the Tongue, about 10 miles from the trading post. Bodine poured coffee and grinned at Two Wolves.
Why are you smiling like that? What have you got up your sleeve this time?
You better stick together from now on, brother. Your reputation as a gunslick is fast approaching mine.
Reluctantly, I will have to agree. I knew I should have never allowed you to help me from under that pony. Something told me you would bring me much grief over the years.
You ready to drift?
I'm going west, Bodine. It would be best if you don't ride with me.
Oh, I think I'll tag along, brother. Someone has to look after you.
My mind is made up, Bodine. I think you knew that several days ago.
I saw a change come over you, if that's what you mean.
If my father will have me, I am going to stay with the Cheyenne on the Little Bighorn.
All right, brother. I won't interfere this time.
Your word on that?
Bodine leaned over and stuck out his hand. Two Wolves took it.
Will you obey your father if he orders you out of the camp?
Certainly. But the words will have to come from his mouth.
I'll wait at the Rosebud, at the point where it angles south. I'll go no farther west than that.
Two Wolves packed up swiftly and swung into the saddle. He looked at Bodine, lying on the ground with his back against a log. Two Wolves lifted his hand and rode toward the west. Bodine waited several minutes before digging another cup out of his pack and placing it on a rock next to the fire. A war-painted Cheyenne stepped out of the bushes and walked to the fire. He squatted down and poured coffee, declining the bread Bodine offered him.
Last bull.
Do not go past the river, Bodine. Wait there for your brother. Medicine Horse will order him out of the camp.
I was wondering if that hunting party took my message back to my adopted father. It's been several weeks.
You have been observed. We have seen the signs you left along your back trail. Medicine Horse thanks you for your concern.
He's my brother.
You do not hate us, Bodine.
No. You're doing what you think is best.
And you did what you thought was best when you rode to warn Custer.
Bodine knew then that he had been under constant observation from the Cheyenne and the Sioux. He had suspected it all along.
Yes. I felt I had a duty.
That is understood in the camps. There are no hard feelings against you. Ride carefully, Bodine. There are many young braves among us who do not know you for what you really are. Lone Dog has promised you a very long and painful death.
Bodine rose, and the two men gravely shook hands. Last Bull turned and walked away, quickly disappearing into the thick brush. It was the 19th day of June. Bodine put out his fire and packed his gear. He took his time, allowing Two Wolves plenty of time to put miles between them. Last Bull had been right. Bodine would have to ride very carefully as he moved west. Bodine stowed his boots and spurs and slipped on high-topped moccasins, tying them securely over his pants legs. He changed clothes, dressing all in buckskin, then swung into the saddle. He had not gone 2 miles before Rowdy's ears perked up. Bodine could feel the tension in the big stallion's powerful body. He moved quickly off the trail and into the brush, dismounting. Bodine watched as 4 Indians came into view, only a few hundred yards off. They were Crow, on a scouting mission for the 7th Cavalry, searching for the Sioux and the Cheyenne. Custer and his men would be only a few days' ride away. Bodine remained motionless. He was not well liked by the Crow. The scouts reined up, swung down, and prepared to rest for a time. Bodine knew it was only a matter of time before the horses scented each other. It would be best to play this as openly as possible. He mounted up and rode directly into the Crow sight. The Crow scouts looked up, hate in their eyes and guns in their fists, as Bodine approached, riding slowly, with his Winchester across the saddle horn, the reins in his left hand.
Cheyenne dog droppings!
What a terrible thing to say to someone who means you no harm.
Your mouth speaks the words, but we do not know what is truly in your heart, Bodine.
My heart is heavy this day. I have lost my brother.
What do you mean?
He has gone to join his people.
Then he will surely die with the rest of the Sioux and the Cheyenne when Yellowhair attacks.
But first you have to find them, don't you?
We have already found them, Bodine. They are by the Little Bighorn. This news has been sent back to Yellowhair.
I'm not here to change anything. I don't think anything can be changed. It's too late for that.
This is the truth. Bodine might be considered trustworthy after all. I was told you came to warn Yellowhair. We were gone at the time.
The crow signaled Bodine to dismount and join them. He did so, carefully, never taking his eyes from the scouts. He passed around his tobacco sack and papers, and the crows nodded with approval.
We have tried to warn Yellowhair that he is wrong about the number of Cheyenne and Sioux. I do not think he believes us.
I did the same some days ago. He did not believe me either.
This is also true. We heard. But it makes no matter. The army will be victorious. If not this time, then the next time.
You're not joining Custer?
We have been ordered to Fetterman.
That order just might have saved your lives.
This is also the truth.
I'm going to leave. I won't hinder your path if you'll promise the same.
Agreed. Go.
Bodine continued west, riding carefully, staying away from well-defined trails, choosing to make his own trail as he rode toward the Rosebud. He arrived at the curve of the river on June the 23rd. Two Wolves was waiting for him.
My father ordered me out of the camp and threatened to disown me if I did not obey. You knew he would do this, didn't you?
I suspected he would.
Custer and his forces are very near. Wolf that has no sense told me this. He has seen them. There will be a great battle, Bodine. Tomorrow or the next day.
Then we'll ride closer, brother. We may be able to help with the wounded.
Two Wolves looked at him, suspicion and doubt mingling in his eyes.
On both sides.
Then we ride.
They made a cold camp that night, not wanting to light a fire and give away their position. They chanced a fire just at dawn for coffee, building the fire under low-hanging branches so the smoke would dissipate. They had cold biscuits with their coffee and then mounted up, heading west.
Is this Sunday?
Saturday, June the 24th.
We have heard no gunfire, so this must not be the day of battle. So would Yellowhair attack on a Sunday? On your God's day?
Troops don't pay much attention to that, Two Wolves. I expect he would attack if it seemed the thing to do.
Odd way to worship one's God.
About this time, Custer's scouts were reporting to him that a large force of Sioux and Cheyenne were camped in a valley near the Little Bighorn. The scouts did their best to convince the Brevet General that the Indians were too large in number.
We attack in the morning.
Sir, the pack train is much slower than our mounted troops. They would trail at least 2 hours behind with our food, ammunition, and equipment.
Custer waved that away. He was eager to get into battle. Much too eager. This was a holy war.
We attack in the morning. Get some rest and have the men check equipment. We'll be in the saddle before dawn.
The Sioux and the Cheyenne were anticipating the battle, and they were more than ready. Later in the day, a band of Arapahoes came into their camp. The Cheyenne believed they were scouts from the army and disarmed them, ready to kill them. But Black Wolf and Last Bull intervened and ordered them taken to the lodge of Medicine Horse. After talking with them, he decided they had come to fight with them and ordered their weapons returned and for them to be fed at his lodge.
It is to be a great battle. Be prepared not only to fight, but to die.
Medicine Horse had made peace with his gods and with himself. He smiled and hefted his Winchester. It was much lighter now that he had emptied it of shells.
This is as close as we'd better go, brother.
They were about 3 miles east of the valley of the Little Bighorn. They watered their horses and filled their canteens at a small spring, and then backed off some distance, allowing the animals a chance to come in at night and drink without being alarmed by human scent. The two young men had been silent most of the day, riding very carefully and cautiously. That, and the fact that they had both felt the battle was only hours away. They made a cold camp and rolled up in their blankets.
Bodine.
Yeah?
I feel a great sadness in my heart.
I know. I feel some of what you feel.
I plan to ride closer in the morning.
We'll ride together.
Colonel Travers stepped out of his quarters and stood in the cool darkness. He lit a cigar, but it did not taste good, and he snubbed it out against the porch railing. He turned to his orderly.
Find Lieutenant Gary for me, please. Tell him I want to see him.
Yes, sir.
Before long, Lieutenant Gary stepped out of the night onto the porch.
Sir?
I have no orders to do this, Gary, but I do have some leeway in the orders from Dakota Command. We'll leave two companies at the garrison under the command of Lieutenant Walters. You and I will lead four companies out of the fort at 3 o'clock in the morning. We're heading for the Rosebuds.
Yes, sir.
Each man will have 4 days hard rations, 100 rounds for his carbine and 24 rounds for his sidearm.
Yes, sir.
Order the garrison to quarters and tell the sergeants to roll the men out at 2 o'clock. You'll meet me at my quarters at that time.
Yes, sir.
And God have mercy on our souls if Bodine was right.
Permission to speak, sir.
Of course.
He probably was right.
I know, son. That's what's got me worried.
On June the 22nd, General Alfred H. Terry ordered Custer to take a detail of 650 soldiers to go to the southern end of the Little Bighorn Valley and wait there. Terry and his men were to reach the northern end of the valley on June the 26th, thus putting the Sioux and Cheyenne encampment in a box. Then General Terry gave Custer permission to depart from his written orders if Custer found sufficient reason. Sunday, June the 25th, was a hot, dry, and dusty day. By dawn, Custer had been on the march for over an hour, pushing straight toward the Little Bighorn River. Colonel Travers, at the head of four companies of cavalry, was just entering the eastern edge of the Rosebud Mountain Range. Bodine and Two Wolves had ridden to within a mile of the river and picketed their horses in a natural corral. They proceeded on foot, carefully, toward a ridge that overlooked the valley of the Little Bighorn.
Jesus God, the column of men's got to be 4 miles long.
I told you.
There must be 7,000 or 8,000 down there.
Yes, about 3,500 warriors. The ghost dancing was concluded last evening. They are ready.
Bodine took his field glasses and watched several Indian boys fishing along the banks of the Little Bighorn. A man wearing a war bonnet joined the boys, but the distance was too great for Bodine to make out the man, even with binoculars. One of the boys, Spotted Hawk, would later relate that it was another boy's uncle, White Shield, a war chief, who had left his dressing for war when he became concerned about the boy's safety along the river.
It looks so peaceful.
It is anything but that, brother. What can we do?
Nothing. I tried to warn Travers. We tried to warn Custer. There is nothing we can do except watch.
As the morning progressed, the day grew warmer, and the young men on the ridge dozed under the sun, waiting for history to unfold before their eyes. By midday, Custer's scouts had firmly located the Indian encampment and reported back to him.
General, the forces you face are many, as plentiful as leaves on the trees.
That's nonsense. Prepare the attack as scheduled. However, in light of your information, we will detour from our set route and proceed on a new route of attack from the ridge overlooking the creek. I will be splitting our command.
Sir!
Captain Benteen, you will take 120 men to scout for Indians in the southwest. Major Reno, you will take 140 men to attack the southern end of the encampment. I'll continue north along the bluff.
Custer then sent a trooper back to the pack train to hurry it along. The pack train carried nearly 30,000 rounds of ammunition, various equipment, and food and water.
Oh, wake up. There's dust.
Hell, there's dust everywhere.
Bodine tried to see through his binoculars. All he could see was a blisteringly hot day filled with haze and dust.
My father's people are at the north end of the village, near the ravine at the curve of the river. See what's happening there if you can.
Bodine again lifted his glasses and brought the Cheyenne encampment into focus.
Lots of activity down there, but nothing hurried.
More dust over there.
Bodine lifted his glasses, focusing on the Hunkpapa Sioux village, camped near timber along the curving Little Bighorn.
They sure are getting ready for something.
Two wolves glanced up at the sun.
It's about 2 o'clock.
Colonel Travers halted his column and consulted a map. He had been following the river, but there was no sign of Custer in his 7th. He took out his pocket watch. 3 o'clock. There were miles left to go. Travers waved his companies forward. Major Marcus Reno told his bugler to sound the charge, and they hit the Hunkpapa Sioux village, catching them completely by surprise. The village was under the leadership of Chief Gall. During the first charge of the cavalry, 2 of Gall's wives and several of his children were killed, and that action probably spelled Reno's downfall. Gall rallied his warriors and drove Reno and his men back into the timber along a curve of the Little Bighorn. But that position was anything but secure. Gall, furious over the deaths of his wives and children, pressed the attack. The cavalrymen became panic-stricken at the size and fury of the Hunkpapa force and left the timber, crossing the Little Bighorn in something of a rout and taking up positions on the high bluffs of the north side of the river where they dug in deep. But the pack train was more than an hour behind them, leaving the men with no more ammunition. Major Reno had already lost 40 men, 13 were wounded, and many were missing. Some of them would never be found. Upon hearing the gunfire, Benteen and his command returned to find a badly shaken Reno and what was left of his mauled command.
In God's name!
Unaware that Reno and Benteen were under such heavy attack, Custer and his 5 companies had galloped north. They were out of sight of the village. Sioux and Cheyenne scouts sent out to spy on General Crook's command had returned, and they saw Custer and his men. They raced back to the village with the news. More than 2,000 Sioux and Cheyenne were mobilized and set out to intercept the troops coming toward them from the lower end of the village. Few among them knew it was Yellowhair until the battle was over. But Medicine Horse knew. The Sioux and Cheyenne were armed with at least 41 different types of rifles and pistols, many of them with Winchester repeating rifles, some with muzzle-loading muskets, others with the traditional bows and arrows and lances. As the army retreated, the Indians gathered up the weapons from the dead and from the ground where panic-stricken men had thrown them in their haste to flee. The combined forces of Sioux and Cheyenne spotted Custer as he and his command topped the ridge just north of Reno's embattled position. Because of the dust and the haze and the gun smoke-filled air, Custer did not see what dire straits Reno was in and continued on north, pursued by at least 2,000 hostiles. Custer tried to get off the ridge and did manage for a time to fight near the river, but within minutes was forced back onto the ridge and continued on north, losing men with each Indian assault. By this time, most of the Indians who had been fighting Reno and Benteen had left the creek to pursue the companies of cavalry on the ridge. All the soldiers who had been along the river, from all commands, had now pulled back to the ridges, many of them losing their horses and their rifles, forced to fight with 6-shooters. However, they were only issued 24 rounds of ammunition for their sidearms. Conditions were growing desperate for the 7th Cavalry. Bodies littered the ground between the river and the ridges. Bands of Cheyenne began leading charges up the ridges, getting very close to the soldiers. The badly frightened horses of the cavalrymen broke and ran free. Out of the 7 companies of troops on the ridges, only 4 companies still had mounts. There was no place left to run.
My God. My God, how could this be?
Custer and his men had now retreated to a point just above the Minneconjou and Blackfoot camps in the village.
Ben, I need a volunteer. I need a volunteer to summon Captain Benteen and his men. This is an order of the utmost urgency.
I'll go, sir. I'll go.
Godspeed, lad.
The courier did not make it, and Benteen, Reno, and Weir would not know what had happened to Custer and his men for another 36 hours. No one is really sure what happened to the courier. He, nor 26 troopers of the E Company, were ever seen again.
We must keep moving.
We must tire them out of their pursuit. We must press on.
Custer and his men had now reached Last Stand Hill, with the warriors of Crazy Horse and Gaul all around them. Benteen and Reno were still pinned down, but they had suffered no more deaths. Mostly, they were under observation from the Indians who surrounded them. They had been strengthened by the arrival of 13 more men, 12 soldiers, and one civilian scout. They had been hiding in the timber along the river. At Last Stand Hill, the fighting had intensified with the Indians closing in. Medicine Horse charged up the hill, waving his coup stick. Custer was dumb with surprise as he recognized Medicine Horse. Custer lifted his pistol and shot Medicine Horse through the chest. The chief tumbled from his horse and stubbornly crawled up the hill. He whacked Custer on the leg with his coup stick, rolled over, and died with a smile on his lips. Custer and his few remaining troopers held to their battle formation to the last. On the ridge above the valley of the Little Bighorn, Two Wolves threw his hands to his head as a great pain filled his brain, almost blinding him with its intensity.
What is it? What's wrong?
My father is dead. But he will not be alone for long.
Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer fell to his knees after being shot through the left side. Bleeding badly, Custer summoned all his will and struggled to rise to his boots. He continued fighting until moments later, he was shot through the temple. Without uttering another sound, he fell to the hot, dry earth and died. Many Indians have stated that he was the last in his command to die on Last Stand Hill. Custer's body was stripped naked, but he was neither scalped nor mutilated, a sign of respect from the Indians who killed him. Last Stand Hill grew quiet as the Indians left and the blood of the dead was soaked into the hot, dry earth. The Sioux and Cheyenne warriors left the hill to the women and the children, who stripped and mutilated many of the bodies. Many of the soldiers were mutilated beyond recognition. Money was taken from the bodies, but since the Indians had no use for it, it was given to the children to play with. Buttons were cut off the uniforms as trinkets, and all the weapons and ammunition and what horses were left were taken. Bodine and Two Wolves rode along the valley and came up to Last Stand Hill from the west. They sat their horses and stared at the scene, total shock and disbelief in their eyes. All the bodies of slain Indians had been taken away.
God have mercy on their souls.
Bodine finally swung down and walked to where Custer lay. Medicine Horse's coup stick lay beside Custer's body. He pointed to it and looked at Two Wolves. Questions in his eyes. Two Wolves shook his head.
We are in great danger here, brother. It will not matter who we are. If we are found by either side on this hill, we will die.
Bodine mounted up and they rode away from the slaughter, heading first west and then, when they were well away from the valley, they headed south, following the river. It was well after dark when they reined up, seeing many small fires along the river.
A dollar says that's Travers heading north from a fort.
No bet, brother. No one must ever know that we were on the ridge overlooking the battle.
I know. Do we ride into Travers' camp?
Might as well.
As they rode, they tidied up the story they would tell. A few hundred yards from the encampment, Bodine called out to the sentries, and they were waved in. Over coffee, Bodine told the story to a stunned Travers and Gary and other officers and sergeants.
All I know is that it was a hell of a battle. It was pretty well over by the time we decided not to go any farther into the Rosebuds. Really, all we could see was a lot of dust in the air.
But you did see the Indian camp.
Yes. Early this morning. By the number of lodges, I would guess about 7,000 or so Indians. Perhaps as many as 3,000 braves.
Dear God in heaven.
And you think they're still in the valley?
I have no reason to think otherwise.
Travers looked at Gary.
We'll try to link up with Terry and Gibbon. It would be suicide for us to ride in there alone. Bodine, will you ride in there with us? Both of you, and Scout.
All right.
Bodine found Terry's column and stayed with it while two wolves rode back to Travers to guide them in. The two forces linked up on the afternoon of June the 26th, just as the sun was setting. They were only a few miles from the valley of the Little Bighorn. Benteen and Reno had watched the Sioux and the Cheyenne break camp that afternoon and start their pullout. Not knowing whether the Indians were trying to trick them into leaving their positions, the surviving members of Custer's forces stayed behind and waited it out, knowing that Terry and Gibbon could not be far away. On the morning of June the 27th, Bodine and Two Wolves led the column to Last Stand Hill, coming up from the south end of the valley. The stench was awful. Several of the younger troopers fainted at the stench, and again at the crest of the hill when the hideousness came into full view. Bodine and Two Wolves found the position of Reno and Benteen and led them to the generals, who listened to their stories in stunned silence. Burial parties had few tools, so very shallow graves were scooped out for some. Only sagebrush covered other bodies. The burial was soon finished. Daisies, Mariposa lilies, and tiny roses bloomed in a pinkish-purple blaze as the still, stunned survivors and rescuers who came too late rode away from the silent, blood-drenched hills above the Little Bighorn.